Instead of the speaker giving feedback, the buzzer will give feedback, like you're touching the wall. But that's one of the, this is only like one of the many, many things that we hope to do in this MOBI lab, mobile brain body imaging, where you have an experiment where we stand on a force platform that measures your sway, and we're going to learn to juggle, we're going to balance, we're going to have people.
The field of neural computation is beginning to touch many, many, many other areas. It's touching education. It's beginning to touch medicine, being able to improve our analysis of EEG, for example, to help diagnose various mental disorders and sleep disorders. And it's clear that it's not just an island unto itself.
There's a huge range of experiments. No one really has looked at people actually doing motivated action with brain imaging.
So it's not only doing the detection, it's doing the classification at this rate.
Yeah, exactly. So it's detecting my face. You can see the face detector on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the green, I don't know if you can see the green, but the green is estimating the orientation of my head. So I will smile.
And then, wow,
and you see,
you spiked it.
The facial expression demonstration by Marnie Bartlett-Stewart, her program, CERT, it can look at every single muscle in the face, detect how they're changing, and then to use that to be able to make judgments about a person's emotional state and whether or not they're telling the truth. But I think the key, though, is that that problem was cracked not by symbol processing, but by looking at the signals, the visual signals, and using layers of processing and learning from examples, which is the sort of learning that humans are extremely good at, and then being able to solve it, this high-dimensional problem, through the same approach that biology takes for solving these high-dimensional problems. And that's one example of many now that we have, that this area is really exploding.
Real versus fake accuracy.
Biologically and neurologically, we have the nervous system that does give us position information about the various parts of our body. Proprioceptors, very specific neurons that give us that exact information on what, what's connected to what. Which is why when you have phantom limb and all these other kind of weird things, when you lose limbs, you still have some of those feelings. But of course, it's nothing that we really fully understand. I mean, everything's still growing and learning all the time.
Yeah, do a little dance. Yeah. There you go.
Neural computation is also going to have a huge impact on building devices that help us interface between humans and machines. Brain-machine interfaces, huge area. And that really is neural computation is at the center of trying to understand how the brain is going to how we're going to be able to record from the brain EEG directly from neurons. John Donahue gave a talk where they're now implanting arrays of electrodes in humans, these are quadriplegics, and translating that into robotic arms.
System, it has two major components. One is the data driven instance, which is this one. Here I have opened, so this is what it looks like. It's a bit small, but I've opened a Wii device, Wii remote, and here you can see that we have accelerometers.
So in this lab, we're interested in the neural control of movement and sensory motor learning. This is a unique facility which allows us to simultaneously record the position of a subject through these infrared emitting diodes and these 24 optoelectronic cameras. and her cortical EEG through this 64-channel EEG system. She's looking into a head-mounted display that has 12 screens, which immerses her in a virtual environment. Now, her view of this virtual environment is shown on this screen. And she is being rendered as a computer avatar in the virtual environment. And this is a bird's eye view of her position as an avatar in this virtual town. And so if you could walk just a little bit, Eve.
This is really control. She has really control over the ball. It's not accidental movement or something. And one basic paradigm is a basket paradigm, where your task is to steer a ball which is falling down with the constant velocity to a blue basket. And the blue basket might be on the left-hand side or right-hand side. And you do this just by thinking of a left-hand movement or a right-hand movement. So you don't do anything, just thinking about your left-hand or right-hand, and the ball should move to the left-hand side or the right-hand side.
Now, what for the big B?
Next Friday.
Right now, it's actually not.
For each digit, it takes 5 seconds?
Now, 4 seconds or 3 to 4 seconds?
For each digit? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so, and then the segmentation, it's on the clock, or does the algorithm recognize that the number has already been put in the system?
Actually, it's detect continuously.
I see.
Yeah, so it depends on the real-time data. If the data is good enough, then maybe 3 seconds is enough. But if this trial is weak, then maybe it will take 6 seconds. So it's, the timeline is adjustable.
So it's 90% and you have that published? 90%?
Yes.
Great.
So a 10-digit number is 30 seconds or something like that?
Yes.
With a 90% success rate.
Yeah.
So UCSD on itself is also not an island, and increasingly becomes important to connect to the outside community. Of course, we also have done that, but also there's some very interesting developments today on global health, wireless health, right, that are led by well-known companies that are not really known for health, but they're known for cell phones and things like that. Right? So Qualcomm is now very much going into health-related technologies, right? And if you think of it, it makes perfect sense, right? So wireless technologies can really help us to connect health to and on a global level, right? And so use wireless technologies besides making phone calls is to really have a network, a health network, and also use wireless technologies for probing the body in mobile settings, right? There is also a West Wireless Health Institute nearby here that is also becoming a leader in this field. And a few companies too. NeuroVigil, for instance, is now being, I guess, one of the leaders in the field of clinical studies of sleep, right, sleep disorders, and doing wireless monitoring of sleep disorders. Neurosky. Neurosky is also a company in the Silicon Valley, but now recently, so this company is coming here in San Diego. So we have connections to this Silicon Valley type of work on brain-machine interfaces for gaming applications.
The problem we are addressing is when researchers, an individual or an archivist, has lots of files and needs to share them in a controlled manner with other people or just manage them. So it's a data management system.
What I think has been wonderful about UCSD and the organized research units that they have deployed, the idea is that the silos, the departments, which are based on disciplines that are hundreds of years old, really have as their goal the education and degree giving, but creating new science is always at the borders between these disciplines, and having the ability to create these new research units and have them evolve and shift. And exactly the way that we started, by shifting from an Institute for Cognitive Science into an Institute for Neurocomputation, was a new look at an old problem, but one that led to a completely different direction.